Hey guys, Josh here, and I wanted to give you guys a quick introduction to what you're about to hear in just a moment. So, back probably two or 3 years ago, before we ever did Generation Y, we did a podcast called Mr. Techie's Computer Academy. I was actually at the time I owned a IT business, and it was our way to talk about technology. And generally, it was a pretty technical podcast in terms of talking about, virus removal, best upgrades, best new computers coming out, home security, some real technical topics. And we had done an episode at some point. I think it was episode 9 out of about 30 episodes that we did before we actually ended the podcast, because I actually got a new job and ended the business. And it was all about 90s technology. So this is breakthroughs in technology that came out in the 1990s. It was this episode that actually spurred our interest in doing the Generation Y podcast, because we had so much fun doing this episode. So it is going to sound a little bit different. We were still pretty new to podcasting and definitely not as comfortable in front of the microphone, but I think it's kind of a glimpse into where we came from, and I think it's a pretty entertaining podcast if you're into 90s computers and AOL and video games and all that. So I'm pretty proud of it. So I want to give you guys a little taste of that, and we'll do that this week as kind of a bonus episode for all of our loyal listeners. We'll be back next week. Unfortunately, a couple things happened. The biggest one being I'm getting ready to go on a business trip, and Amy and I have both had a cold for the last few days, so we didn't record all of the SNES podcasts. We have a couple few little bits left to do. I didn't really want to do it with a messed up voice, and Amy's been sick, so we'll be back next week with the SNES episode as promised, but for this week, I thought I would send this out to you guys, and let me know what you think. Give us an email at thegenerationypodcast@gmail.com. Again, it's generationypodcast@gmail.com. I actually think I threw a the in the beginning of it when I first said that. We'd love to hear from you. Always, comment on Facebook as you guys do, and let us know, and we'll be back next week with an SNES episode. Thanks, guys.
Got mail.
Fresh out the box. Stop. Look and watch. Ready yet? Get set. It's all that.
I'm the king of the world!
Welcome.
I'm Kurt Loder. This is MTV News.
File's done.
Thanks for listening. My name is Josh LaFrance, and with me today I have my co-host Amy.
Hi, guys.
So hopefully you enjoyed our little intro we did there. We had a lot of fun putting that together.
Yeah, that was fun. It was nice to reminisce.
So as you guys probably gathered from listening to some previous episodes of the podcast and listening to our intro, which was way different today, this is a special episode. This is Tech Rewind 90s edition. And so what we're going to hopefully do over the next 30 to 45 minutes here is talk about some 90s technology that was really breakthrough and kind of got us into what I would refer to as the modern age of technology, which is what we're in right now. Technology grows exponentially, and I think, every year some new awesome stuff comes out, and I can't even imagine 20 years from now where we're going to be with technology. Like, if I think back to when I was a kid, because I grew up in the 90s, and Amy, I know you're a 90s kid as well.
I am.
And let me say, this podcast isn't just for 90s kids. This podcast is for anybody who lived through the 90s. So as long as you were born sometime in the 80s, you don't have to be a child. You could have been 30 in the 90s. I think you'll appreciate what we're going to talk about. But if I think back to when I was a kid, like right now I have my Nook in my hand, and you have your iPhone. We like to use devices during the show when we record. I did not even ever imagine that we'd have something like a Nook.
Basically a computer in your hand.
Yeah. I mean,
I used to think that they would be like, my friends would be like, let's pretend we're from the future and talk on our hands because they have little microchips in them and we can use our hands to make phone calls.
So you thought there wasn't going to be cell phones. You're going to have a chip in your hand.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Stop it. I was like six.
That's so scary. I'd have nightmares about that. My God. Yeah, so
can you imagine all the, like, infections people would get?
That's weird. Like, if you have a virus, it's actually a virus that would, like, attack your immune system or something. So, yeah, we're going to just dive right into these aren't, we're not going to get into the real tech specs of everything. You know, this is the point of this podcast and my website and anything that I plan on doing in the future with MrTechie.net. That goes for future podcasts. I'm looking at doing one about video gaming right now called Classic Console, which might come out end of the month for the first episode. And we're talking about some other things that I won't reveal quite yet. But the goal of all this is to be for your average user. And I don't mean that in like a belittling way. I'm not talking down to our audience here. I'm saying that like I'm somebody who's a tech geek. I know about all the stats and all the statistics, you know, all the specifications of different CPUs and memory and all that.
And I am an average user.
Right. But you don't want to listen to that in a podcast. No. I know I don't. And a lot of podcasts that are out there are like that. They're very geeky. And so we're not going to get into today, like, all the details. We're just going to look at a broad view of what is this advancement from the 90s that helped society. So we'll play commercials, some retro commercials, which is like Amy and Maya. It's like our favorite thing is the retro commercials.
I love retro commercials.
And we'll discuss these items, and hopefully you guys find this entertaining. And without any further ado, let's get into our first 90s technology breakthrough, which is America Online.
America Online introduces new version 4.0.
There has never been a better time to get online.
The easiest just got easier.
Instant messages.
I can customize my email.
My niece sent me a picture.
If you have a phone line, you can be online.
It's the easiest way to keep up with old friends.
Everyone I know is on it.
We've spent over $1 billion to create a state-of-the-art high-speed network, and with 56K, connections are faster than ever.
It's the ultimate local guide.
New 4.0, check it out.
It's my connection to the world.
America Online. So easy to use, no wonder it's number one.
So that's a pretty classic commercial there.
I'm just like, aw, the memories.
So you want me to pick the 4.0 one. Can you explain why 4.0?
Because that was the first one that I got when I first got the internet.
Yeah,
I got 4.0.
I'm trying to think when I started using internet. I know that we had, I think right prior to us getting AOL, I think we might have had CompuServe or something like that. Which was pretty early
on. My friend had CompuServe, and wasn't it kind of like a ripoff of AOL?
I actually don't know which. I mean, we could look it up real quick because we have the technology.
There was one that was a ripoff of AOL, and it had like the same instant messenger and everything, but like nobody was on it. Everybody went to AOL, so nobody was ever online.
I don't know who was first. We can look it up real quick if we want to. But I know that AOL grew. You know, when it blew up like it did, people just, you know, it's like anything. It's like you copy what's mm-hmm. successful. You know, it's kind of like why, even though you and I love Burger King, but whenever McDonald's releases something, what does Burger King do? They release the exact same thing because you copy who's the most successful person in whatever or company in the field that you're in. So I think everybody kind of looked at AOL and said, okay, we got to do what they're doing. And so, you know, from a business standpoint, they were just playing copycat from that point on. You know, so let's go back to, like, the early history. And actually, you know, while we're talking about this, I'm going to look up CompuServe and just, I'll tell you right now which one came first. Now, there was internet, obviously, before AOL. They're not the first. But what they really did is they,
How did people get on the internet before AOL?
There was other dial-up companies. Oh, yeah. And the thing you got to remember is that, you know, prior to the dawn of what I would call the internet age, which is, you know, that early 90s when AOL really took off. Prior to that, you had a lot of universities. You know, mm-hmm. internet's been around for a long time, going way back before the 90s. You know, they were doing inter-department communications at some of the major universities on the East Coast back in, like, we're talking the 60s and 70s.
Wow.
Like, you know, the kind of the seeds of what would become the internet as we know it now were planted a long time ago. So AOL certainly wasn't the first provider for internet, but they really kind of, you know, I feel took things in a direction that nobody else had ever done before.
They made it user-friendly enough so that people...
Well, that, you know, I think one thing that they did, which was kind of smart, was all the channels.
Oh, yeah, and the chat rooms.
If people, you know, yeah, if you people don't remember...
Do you guys remember ASL? When you go into a chat room and somebody would pop up and be like, ASL? And then, of course, you know, I was like 13, so I'd always lie. So I'd be like, my age is 25, and I'm female, and I live in, like, Hollywood, and they would always believe you too. And they'd be like, oh, cool. What's it like in Hollywood? I was a weird kid.
So, just to answer your question, it's like CompuServe actually probably. Let's see, when's AOL start? AOL was founded. Of course, now my computer or my note decided to. Here we go. Hey, AOL was founded in 1991 as America Online. It was previously called something before that. I'm pretty sure CompuServe was way earlier because AOL was founded in 83, CompuServe was founded in 1969. So AOL wasn't the first, like I said, but they were definitely the most successful.
The most popular. Yeah.
I'm just looking. This is kind of interesting. It says CompuServe, and we're getting off topic of the 90s here, but it says, let me go back up to where I was, about selling connectivity. It says that CompuServe, at one point in the early 1980s, it was common if you wanted to have a connection to the internet through CompuServe, and I'm thinking probably this is just business people, it was $30 per hour, the charge. So you're talking in the early 1980s.
Doesn't AOL charge, didn't they charge with a minute, though, AOL?
They did, yeah.
And then they switched to a monthly fee at some point.
They did, yeah. I thought you had that written down somewhere when that change was.
I might.
I remember that was really big news when they switched from the paying per hour to paying the unlimited, you know, for the month, or rather per minute to the unlimited per month, because people, you know, use so much internet. You don't have that written down the time?
No.
I thought it was in that document you had there. No?
Nope.
For me, I remember it was funny. It would be like my dad would be monitoring it, and he'd be like, okay, we only have X number of minutes left.
My AOL account had a timer on it.
Oh, did it?
And it would kick me off after a certain amount of time. Yep. And you know what bugs me? It's like, okay, so I don't know, like, when I was little, or when I was probably, like, 13, well, probably, like, 12 or 13 when I really started using AOL, especially to, like, instant message my friends and that sort of thing, I would always, like, you become, like, kind of addicted to it, and that was my generation. We were always on AOL Instant Messenger, and I would always try and sneak online, and you never could because of that stupid dial-up thing. My parents would always hear me getting online.
Oh, yeah, that.
And they'd be
like,
Amy, get off the computer, and I'm like, crap, they can hear me.
If nobody knows what we're talking about, or if you don't know, that at the beginning of the intro of the podcast, we had within the music, that little bumper, we had this noise that sounded like, I don't know
static.
What you'd call it, like static mixed with like a digitized, like, it's very grating to the ear. It's like, oh God, like when you hear it, it like makes you happy because you remember like your childhood or remember like an earlier time in life, but also it's pretty darn painful sounding. It's not a good noise, but you know, I remember, and then it was funny because sometimes you could tell like, oh man, the noises are further apart. It's gonna be slower today, or like you could like tell based on like
tell when my AOL wouldn't connect because it would always be
it would sound weird, like different. Yeah, it's funny. So it looks like in February of 1991, AOL, so America Online, for people that don't know, we should probably go back to the beginning here. People that don't know what America Online was, and I think you've probably gathered from what we were saying, it was a internet service provider. I mean, they still are, but their business model has shifted big time because people don't pay for, you know, everyone has cable or DSL. Very few people still use dial-up internet. And of the ones that do, there's a lot of free options available now, so people don't pay for it anymore.
I don't know if I know anybody that uses AOL.
I don't know anybody. I know people that still use the AOL client, yeah. Like the software, which you can have, like, dial, or you can have a cable, rather, or DSL, and use the AOL software to still use the AIM, still get to your email, look at your all the channels and stuff. Like, the software still exists, but they have really shifted as a company. They are really more doing, you know, just the website, all the web stuff and the web mail. And I look at them kind of like the way I look at Yahoo now. It's kind of in a similar way. So AOL was founded in the early 80s. And in the early 90s, they actually changed their name to America Online. Actually, in 1989, they changed their name to America Online. And so in February of 1991, AOL for DOS was released, which was the very, very first version of AOL.
Oh, I wonder what that looks
and,
like.
And I'm sure you could probably find it. I'm sure if you had an old enough computer with a, you know, 56K modem, you could probably install it, and it'd probably still work. Because a lot of the numbers I know are the same. They haven't changed. They have less numbers now because the demand went down. But, you know, think about that for a minute, too. America Online, do you remember, like, when, even, like, in, you know, we live in a very rural state. People don't know. We live in Vermont, which is a very, very tiny state. People go.
We like maple syrup.
People will say to me, like, "What part of Canada are you?"
I think that we're from Canada.
I swear to God. When I used to work at Comcast, people would say, "What part of Canada is that?" Or
yep.
Isn't that like New York State, like upstate New York? It's like, nope, it's Vermont. It's its own state. You should probably go back and take some geography lessons. Like, I might not know where all the states are on the map, but I at least know that if you tell me a state, oh yeah, that's a state.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be like New Fund, Ohio, and I'd be like, oh, that's a state, right? No, it's like some made-up thing. Like, people don't have any clue about states. It's weird to me. It's really very weird.
But now I've gotten, like, that we are in Canada a lot.
But anyway, even for Vermont, I mean, I can remember there was, like, four or five different numbers that you could dial into to get on AOL.
Oh, I forgot about the numbers
there was that you there dial was a into. Bunch. You could pick a different one depending on, like, you know, it was always a thing. Like, you'd look every couple of months and go, hey, is there one closer to me now? Like, I remember at first there was one, the only one, there was, like, one in Vermont. And then I remember all of a sudden they add, like, two numbers in Burlington, which is the largest city in Vermont, which actually was closer to where I was living at the time. And I was like, oh, that's a lot closer. And then the speeds were better because you're dialing into somewhere that's closer to you. And so it was funny. I remember all the different numbers that they had and stuff. But the chat room was, you know, I think that was the thing that really kind of blew AOL up, was the advent of the chat room. Because there were chat rooms previous to that, but, like, it just, with the channels, with different, you know, you could go into a chat room for, say your interest was in, like, sports, or if you were, like, a teenager at the time and you wanted to go talk to other teenagers, or if your interest was, like, in fishing, there was, like, different chat rooms for different things. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, and I was always in chat rooms. Always.
Now, were you pretending you were somebody that you weren't?
Yes. Me and my friends would go in, and we'd be like, oh, we're a supermodel, and, like, and then we'd get, like, 20,000 instant messages all at the same time, and they're all from, like, creepy people, and, oh, yeah, that was us, me and my friends. We would just joke around all the time like that, but I feel like the AOL chat rooms always had really, like, creepy people in them.
Maybe well, because you didn't know who anybody doing. Was.
Yeah.
So, actually,
I feel like chat rooms aren't really in anymore.
No, it's just different. Well, everybody uses Facebook chat, yeah. Right? Or Facebook Messenger.
But, like, chatting with strangers. I feel like people are, like, into message boards, but
I don't think people realized back then, though. I mean, it's kind of like, if you even think of it, we're kind of innocent. People don't realize, like, I think people understand the danger of talking, especially for children, of talking with strangers online. And it's something that we really should tell children is, here's the danger, here's why you shouldn't, because there's some crazy people out there. Mm-hmm. And we were just all talking to whoever. I mean, I remember my parents never supervised what I was doing.
I remember I would add, like, random kids, that at least people that I thought were kids when I was younger, because they told me that they were my age, I would add them to my buddy list on AOL, yeah. And I would talk to them all
the
time. Oh, me
too. And you didn't know who they were. Yeah. Oh, you had no way of knowing who they were. Yeah, it's kind of scary to think about, but it was a more innocent time, I guess. One more thing about AOL, I just found on here, it actually says, we were asking about when they changed their service. In October of 96, they went from the hourly fee, so that where you could get, like, X number of minutes a month, to a flat rate, $20 a month, unlimited minutes. That was in 1996 October.
That's cheap.
So, yep.
Compared to now.
Yep, so, what's interesting is that even still, you know, at the late 90s, their user base was about 10 million people were using AOL. I don't know what the numbers are now, but I bet it's probably, like, less than a million. Yeah. At least in terms of people actually using,
I mean, you couldn't just have, like, a browser, could you, without AOL? Or, like, CompuServer, that sort of thing? Because they had Netscape browser, but did you have to use that? Could you use that by itself without AOL? Do you know what I mean?
Later on, yes. I can't.
I meant, like,
think,
at first. Did I can't you have think back have that far.
I want to say, well, like, 4.0. Somebody can email me if I'm wrong, or if you know. If I remember right, and this is, like, my memory's real hazy, I think with, like, AOL 4.0, you could open up a different browser.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you couldn't open up a different browser. You had to use what the browser was in AOL.
Okay.
And I know, like, by, like, 7.0, because I still had AOL for a long time, we didn't get DSL or cable, actually, until, like, I was almost out of high school. I mean, we had dial-up for a long time. At that point, you could open up another browser. You could open up, you know, Netscape back then, or, you know, what else was out then? Was the early Firefox out? Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe.
I don't even remember.
Maybe. You could open up another browser anyway, and you could browse in a different window.
You know what I miss about AOL? Is the unsend button. The unsend email button.
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about that.
I remember when I would get in, like, you know, you're, like, 13, and you're drama, and your whole, like, group of girlfriends fight all the time. And we'd send each other emails, and then I'd, like, regret sending it, and then I'd just click the unsend button. They need to have that now.
There's a couple of, not something we'll get into today, but there's a couple of plugins I can go over sometime for, well, you know, I always talk about Google, like I'm some Google fanboy, but Google Chrome is a plugin. The problem with it is that you only get, now there's a window. You only have, like, five or ten minutes to but it's nice if you send out an email by accident and go, oh, crap, that's the wrong person, you can unsend it.
Oh, that's awesome.
You have a window of time. But it's a plugin you have to add to the Chrome browser.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it does exist. But yeah, AOL is revolutionary, and we love it, and there's a fondness in our heart for AOL. And sometimes I'd like to just install the software again on my computer just to, like, go on it for, like, scroll down memory. Even though I'm sure it's way different now.
What, we should just... But, would 4.0 run on our computer?
No.
Why not?
It's such an early, early version of AOL. Oh. The problem is, especially with, like, Windows 7 now and with Windows 8, even with compatibility mode, a lot of the older stuff just runs like crap. I mean, we could find an old computer somewhere, sitting somewhere, and plug it in. And
I think my parents
have... I have enough junky old computers laying around because I like to... Being Mr. Techie and all, I like to play with junk computers, but...
Yes, there's a lot, trust me.
You made me get rid of a lot of them, hey?
I did.
You did.
My house is only so big.
Yeah, well, okay. I'll have to make an addition, like the addition for all of Josh's classic computers.
We moved these computers over to the east wing of the house.
All right, so we've spent like a lot of time on AOL, so let's move on to something else. All right, so next we're going to talk about the iMac, which is something that's very near and dear to my heart. We'll get into that in just a moment.
Presenting three easy steps to the internet. Step one, plug in. Step two, get connected. Step three, there's no step three. There's no step three.
All right, so that was kind of a funny commercial. That's one where I think, you know, you at home probably have just heard it, but go on the show notes and watch it because it's kind of neat. The hard thing about the iMac commercials is that there's not really... Most of them were just music, like, and they were copywritten music, so we couldn't really use any of that in the show. That's one of the only ones that has actually talking in it, but it was a revolutionary ad campaign, too. Do you remember the ads for the iMac?
I don't remember the ads at all. They
played that song. I'm not going to sing, even though I can sing okay, but I'm not going to sing on the podcast. That'd probably make people turn it off. But they played the that song with the Rolling Stones.
Is that the one where they had all the Macs?
The colors everywhere. Yeah. You know? And they had the Macs, all the different colored iMacs, like spinning around and stuff.
Yeah, that's the ones I
remember. She's like a rainbow.
Okay, calm down.
Okay. So, yeah, iMac, and I'm not someone who, I've said this on the show before, I'm not someone who's a Mac person. You pick on me about that a lot on the show, about how I don't like iPhones and I'm not really a Mac person.
Yeah.
But at one point in my life,
Men are more Android. I read a survey.
Oh, for cell phones?
Women are more iPhone, iMac, men are more Android, and PC.
I'd say that's probably true. But there was a time in my life growing up where, you know, like I said before in a previous episode of the podcast, where I would be found very frequently in front of a Macintosh computer, especially at school. You know, we had the old Macs. We also had the original Apple computers. I had like an Apple IIc
with the big floppy.
Yeah, we talked about that before. But so I was an Apple computer user for a long time. Now, people are probably wondering, why would Josh talk about the iMac? Well, for me, the iMac is a game changer because it kept Apple afloat. If we go back to the history of Apple as a company, they had made this big, huge splash when they released their first computer. They sold tons of computers to schools and stuff. And really, Windows, I think Microsoft realized that, hey, we're losing this huge bit of the market here. And they aggressively attacked it. And for multiple reasons I'm not going to get into today, but by the end of the 90s, Apple as a company was starting to die. And I think that at the time, and I think Steve Jobs was still in charge then. I know he was, you know, up until a few years ago, and unfortunately he passed away. But I think even back then, I think he was pretty much steering the ship in terms of Apple's, what they were doing. And I think he recognized that we need to do something different. We need to do something that's revolutionary. We need to do something that's going to be a game changer for computers. And so the way I like to word it is United States, 1998. Picture yourself. No, I sound like Sophia from...
It's like Sophia from the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Picture it. Sicily.
Oh, sorry. There it is. Yeah. Picture it. The United States, 1998. You know, Apple as a company, people are at home are like, I don't like the Golden Girls.
I love the Golden Girls.
Turn the show off.
If you don't like the Golden Girls, then...
Don't tell them not to listen. We need all the listeners we can get.
Yeah, we want you to listen, but...
But Apple as a company, they were dying. And so, you know, why is the iMac revolutionary? Well, I mean, it kept Apple afloat. And if Apple wasn't kept afloat, if Apple as a company ceased to exist, then no more iPhones, or no iPhones ever. No iPhones, no iPads, no iOS devices, and no iTunes. I mean, look at what iTunes has done for the music industry.
Yeah, iTunes is
cool. The iMac single-handedly saved all that. Think of all the things that would be different right now.
My life would be totally different.
If Apple hadn't survived.
That would be really weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, your phone wouldn't exist, you know?
Everybody would still be using, like, Kazaa.
I think somebody else would have came along and been smart about it and would have done some sort of the same sort of thing. I think that iTunes was revolutionary because it, like, kind of... I think it made that happen sooner than it would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I think it kind of pushed things in that direction. People buying, you know, 99-cent song downloads. But, yeah, so the iMac is what saved everything and what made this able to happen, all these advances in technology that they were able to do in the early 2000s and going forward. And so why is the iMac revolutionary? Well, the biggest thing, and you heard it in the commercial, is the fact that you could hook that thing up and be on the internet within, like, literally within 30 seconds. Now, I remember a little story here, personal story. So when I was in junior high, so probably 7th grade, maybe 8th grade, I think 7th grade, there was this, it was right before the Olympics, the 1998 Winter Olympics, so it must have been like fall of 97. And we had this assembly at our school, and they had some people from the bobsled team, the U.S. bobsled team, because they actually practice in upstate New York. They came to our school with their bobsleds, did this whole talk about the Olympics and how they were going to the Olympics. And I don't remember where it was that year, maybe Nagano or something like that, but it wasn't in the U.S., I don't think. I don't think it was Salt Lake City. It was 98. Anyway, not important. So they came into this whole big talk, and they said, we're doing this contest, and so you can enter if you want. And then the prize, if you win, is a free iMac, a free printer. It was like this whole package. It was like a $3,000 value of this whole package. And so my teacher decided that they were going to make it an assignment. She was going to make it mandatory. Not only was she going to grade it, but they're also going to turn it in. So me being like this junior high, you know, pain in the ass slacker that I was, that's all right. It's donkey. Being the slacker that I was, I put off doing this thing to like the last minute. My friends were, for days, it was about, like, what does the Olympic spirit mean to you? And we had to include, like, some information about, like, the history of the Olympics and, like, throughout time and how it's this, you know, peaceful competition between countries and all this stuff. And so I waited to the very last moment and hopped on a computer in my study hall, and I BS'd this thing together in about 30 minutes and turned it in. And so, like, within a week, I got this phone call saying, hey, you're one of the 10 finalists, because 10 kids in the whole country would win a free iMac package. And so I was one of the 30 finalists, and then about a month later, I got a letter in the mail saying, you've won. Now, the embarrassing thing was, I mean, it was cool. It was a cool, like, memory, but it's embarrassing, was that they had an assembly. Like, they came back to the school. Like, if I remember right, I think the governor was there, because I was the only one from Vermont. I was one of the only ones from the East Coast. Like, and they gave me the iMac, and it was, like, on stage in front of everybody, all these big boxes, and, like, the local news was there. Like,
oh,
like,
my gosh.
Here we are, it's Channel 3. Like, CBS was there. And they interviewed
awesome.
Me. And, of course, people can tell I talk fast anyway. I've tried to, like, slow it down for the podcast. So as a little kid who had just had a whole bunch of soda because I was celebrating, and they interviewed me, like, so what do you think about winning the iMac? And I was like, it's so great. I'm so excited. Like, it was 1,000 miles an hour. I watched it that night, and I'm like, oh, my God. I was this little dork.
I really
dork
want to see it. Do you have it on VHS?
My parents probably have it at home somewhere.
I'm going to find it. I'm going to watch it.
Like a major dork. So it was cool. Yeah, I won an iMac. So that iMac that I have, the one that's downstairs in my basement that I want to hook up at some point, I actually got that before they actually released them publicly. Like, they weren't even out yet. It's like, you couldn't walk into a store and buy it. I got mine first.
That's awesome.
Which is cool.
That is cool.
But, yeah, so I got home with it, you know, because so back then, the reason why this thing is revolutionary, like we're saying, is the big thing for the iMac was it was an all-in-one unit. Like, think about it. Back then, you didn't really have, as far as I know, another computer where the monitor and the computer, I mean, there was some things like the early Apple IIs, which were bigger, but for what it was very, you know, the shape looked kind of like this, like, kind of like TV-looking shape. With the colors, like mine's blue, but they had purple, green, red. And so it was just like all in one, looks like a little mini TV looking thing. Like, I remember taking it home, like the PC at the time, if you wanted like AOL, like for instance, talking about what we were just talking about, our last thing, if you wanted AOL, you know, you had to go out and buy a modem, whether it was an external modem or maybe you had to actually install like a modem in the computer. And that's how you got on the internet. And this thing had a built in modem. which was pretty revolutionary. So you literally, I remember getting it home, plugging it into the phone jack on the wall. I had the disc, the free 300 hours? No, was it hours?
I think it was 300 hours.
Yeah. It was like 300 hours of AOL. And I remember my dad goes, go ahead, sign up for it. It's free, whatever, even though we already had an account. He didn't want me like using up our hours that we had at home. So I signed up for another account using the free hours I got with my iMac, and I plugged this thing in, and within like 30 minutes, I was on the internet, which is back then crazy. So it's revolutionary for its time. And, here, there's a picture of it right there. We're looking at a picture of the Bondi Blue iMac. So iMacs, they still make them now. I mean, now that they're really flat, like look kind of like a flat screen TV, and those are like the flagship computer. I mean, really, the iMac's like the number one computer, the MacBook being a close second. But without the iMac, no more Apple. Without Apple, no iTunes. So I think it's pretty important.
I can't imagine the world without like iPhones and iTunes.
Yeah, it's
weird to think about.
It's crazy. So here's an interesting thing. The iMac, the original iMac, was the first legacy-free PC. Do you know what that means, Amy?
I do know what it means, Josh.
What does that mean? Can you tell our listeners at home?
This is our second take, because at first he recorded it saying that I probably don't know what it meant.
And then I felt
bad. And then I yelled at him.
We don't usually do multiple takes of things, but Amy got mad with me.
And I was like, I know what it means. It means it doesn't have a floppy disk drive.
It does. That is correct. I shouldn't assume. You know what assuming means?
Yeah.
If you assume, it makes an asset of you and me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... Yeah, no floppy disk drive. So you think about that for a minute. It's the first Mac to have not a floppy disk drive, and it might be the first. I'm trying to think about computers back then. Ones that I use, like desktops and laptops. They're a PC. I'm pretty sure they all had floppy disk drives at that point. It might be the very first, which is also revolutionary. So I remember, now I don't even, think twice about it. But back then I was like, oh my god, there's no disk drive. How am I going to save everything? Like, now with, Google Drive, and you can, even, in the 2000s, well, some point we'll do, the 2000s, 2000 and 2010, maybe we'll do, 2000, 2005 and talk about some, the crazy, early 2000s technology stuff, and, everybody was burning mix CDs then, everybody was using CDs and CDRs and all that, but...
Which, speaking of burning mix CDs, I just found all of my mix CDs from when I was in 8th grade, and we went for a car ride today for an hour, and I made Josh listen to all of them.
Yep, the Spice Girls.
Yeah, Spice Girls.
Some wonderful stuff in there.
So hip hop and rap, Lil' Kim.
Not my cup of tea at all. Not what I'm into.
I remember when I was young. This is so off topic. Hold on. When I was younger, I used to listen to songs I would never let my daughter listen to, and I used to get grounded so many times for all the songs that were on my CDs. And all my friends had them all on there, and I listened back to stuff I had on my CDs, and I was like, why the heck was I listening to that?
It was appalling.
I was 13.
To hear it today, I'm like, Amy? You were listening to this at the age of 12?
It was what all my friends were listening to.
Man, I must have grown up in a group in Vermont, too. My town, people didn't listen to that stuff. I don't know what. Something in the water down here or something?
I don't know.
But where was I going with that? You totally threw me off.
Topic, sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I was saying, so, a few years later, it wouldn't have been a big deal to not have a disk drive because everybody was burning stuff on CDs. We're talking about CDRs. That's how we got here. But, for the time, it was that was pretty crazy to not have a disk drive. So, revolutionary in a couple of ways. And the iMac, let's see if we can find, where the heck is it? Oh, here it is. So... The iMac in Forbes magazine was named an industry-altering success and one of the best computers of all time. So there's high praise for the iMac. So did you use one of the colored ones, or did you just use the newer ones in high school?
I used the colored ones.
Oh, you did?
The one that you have in the basement.
So why don't you ever want to play with it? It should be Lane flashback. We could.
I guess. Ooh, it's not like it has a ton of stuff on it.
Too bad we don't have a phone line. We could have taken the iMac and installed AOL. And plugged it into the phone line. And it would have been flashback, memory lane.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah. All right, so on to the next item. I guess we're done with IMAX, right?
I'm done.
All right, we'll put, as always, put the links to the commercials and stuff on there. And the show notes for you to watch for your viewing pleasure. And so on to the next item.
The wait is over. The hits keep on coming. This
Superstar Hit Collection is here. This is the one. Now too on CD or cassette.
Just take me.
To order, call the number on your screen or send check or money order for the amount shown plus shipping and handling. Must be 18 or older to call.
Okay, so I know we cheated with that one a little bit. We had trouble finding a video for the, or some sort of audio clip for this next thing that we're going to talk about. So we found that, which was the, what was that commercial for?
The Now 2. We couldn't find a good one for the Now 1, which had like the Spice Girls on it. Well, that one had the Spice Girls on it, but that one, that was like the sad Spice Girls when they said goodbye to Jerry, which you probably, none of you all know probably what I'm talking about at
you,
all.
You just made an entire section of our audience tune out.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
But so, I think if people, you know, thought for a minute, listen to the show and knows about some of the things we talk about, the fact that we were playing a commercial for a commercially available, like, mix CD that you could buy, because now that's what I call music, is they still make that, right?
Yeah. They're up to, like, now, like, 40-something.
Isn't that higher than that? I thought they were, like, 80-something.
Probably. I don't know. Don't quote me on that.
But anyway, so what we're going to talk about has nothing to do with now, that's what I call music. We just didn't have a good montage of 90s music that we could play for you guys, so we threw that in there. But what we're going to talk about is two major advancements in the 1990s, which really changed how we listen to music. And one of them really doesn't... I guess one of them, I would say, really isn't even, like, valid anymore because people aren't using that. We'll get to that in a minute. But the other one definitely still is. And that, so the first one is that, which is MP3s, so which are still going strong today. So when was the first time that you remember seeing an MP3 file?
Probably when I went to my friend's house and she had Kazaa and...
Bad.
Yes, she was bad. We all were. Oh my god, am I gonna get arrested?
No.
It's been long enough. It's been so many years. But no, they all had Kazaa and like Bear Share and LimeWire. They all had that. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, I can get all these MP3s for free. And that's the first time I ever saw an MP3.
So, MP3 stands for, just a little technology here, MPEG 2 Audio Layer 3, more commonly referred to as an MP3. So, it's an audio coding format. So, it's what they call lossy data compression. So, just real quick, like, tech tip here for people listening at home. So, there's two kinds of data compression. One is lossy, and one is lossless. Lossy, like MP3, and there's other file formats that do this as well. The more that you compress it, the crappier the audio sounds. So, I can remember back when I got my first MP3 player, it only held like, it was like 512 megabytes. So, I wanted to put like as many songs as I could, so I compressed the crap out of that. And have you ever done, do you remember doing that?
They sounded horrible.
Did you ever do that before with an MP3 player?
Yeah,
and it sounds absolutely atrocious, because the more you compress it, the more of the audio data you lose, both from the top end and the bottom end. So, you know, talking about the high-pitched frequencies and the real low frequencies. And it sounds like you're playing something out of a tin can. It sounds like complete crap. So, MP3s are what we call lossy. Like a WAV file, like if you save like a sound file on your computer, save it as a WAV. WAV files, which are much older than MP3s, they are what's called lossless, which means that when you save that WAV file, which is why they're so big, when you save that WAV file, there is no data loss. So there's plenty of, you know, tons of lossless formats out there. People that are really audiophiles who are really... don't want their audio quality suffering, will use lossless. But a lot of the players, like your iPods and stuff, you know, you really, in order to get the most bang for your buck, you got to go with, like, MP3. And some of the higher bitrate MP3s, like if you go, you know, something that's not quite as compressed, the audio is fine. I mean, unless you have, like, super magic hearing, like you're, like, Superman or something, you're not going to hear the difference, I don't think. People claim that you can, but I've never heard it. I can't tell the difference between a WAV file and a good, you know, large-sized MP3. So the reason why we're including this is MP3s were created in 1991, finalized in 92, and published in 93. So you're talking about the mid-90s is when it really first kind of took off. 1995 was when they finalized some of the same types of MP3 files that we use today. And yeah, I mean, it took off from there. With the advent of you had kind of two things going on at one time. We already talked a little bit about AOL. So you have internet blowing up. And suddenly you have MP3, so people didn't have to make a mixtape anymore. You know, on a cassette tape, you could just play your music right on a computer. You could download it, and that created way, like, future problems. You know, thinking about the early 2000s.
What did they use in the 90s to download MP3s? Was it Napster?
No, I mean, I think a lot of us just... I remember going to websites. I remember going to, like, specific websites where the people
would
MP3s.
Because when I really started to use a computer was, like... I remember it was, like, around everybody thought the Y2K was happening.
Yeah, Napster was, like, early 2000s, the whole Napster thing, and the music industry starting to crack down, and Metallica getting really pissed at Napster, and, you know, at some point maybe we can do a little story about that in one of the episodes, because that's kind of an interesting story. But in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, it was, like, the wild, wild west. I remember going to, like, certain websites online where they would literally just post the MP3 right up there. Nobody was policing it. Nobody was, you know, keeping track of who had what. So, and there was no, like, charges being filed for most of these things. So there was all kinds of copyright and music just kind of out there on the internet. And there was really nobody stopping anybody from doing it. So Napster became, you know, huge because of the fact that you could download at higher speeds and people could share with other people. You know, instead of it being a website where this file's hosted on the internet, you know, you could share with millions of people all over the globe all your files, which also meant that you could spread all kinds of nasty viruses. Which is the other flip side of the whole Napster
I'm pretty
thing.
Sure I filled my parents' computer with a ton of viruses when I used Kazaa, and I feel kind of bad about it.
So, yeah, so MP3s, you know, really started to come to prominence in the mid to late 90s. So the other thing we wanted to talk about in our little music section here of the Tech Rewind 90s edition was the other technology that really kind of blew up in the 90s, which now people don't really use as much anymore, which is CDRs. So now, you know, you can burn Blu-rays, you can burn DVDs. But all of that wouldn't have been possible without this compact disc recordable format that started up in the early 90s. So am I allowed to cheat a little bit?
No.
What do you mean no? Come on. If I can't cheat, then we can't include this in our episode.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So basically, reason why I'm including this in the 90s is because there is no damn way that anybody could afford to do this in the 80s. So 1988 was when the first CDR... format came out, and Sony and Philips both were kind of working on their own thing. They both ended up working together to create the CDR format. And the reason why I think that you can include it in this episode with the 90s stuff is because, like I said, nobody could afford it and it wasn't commercially viable. Like, even going to like 1990, I want you to guess. What do you think the first CD burner would have cost?
$2,000.
Try $35,000.
I'm a little off.
Okay, so but here's the thing, though, right? So here's why I say it's a 90s thing. So $35,000 in 1990, okay? By 90...
You mean $3,500?
$35,000.
Oh, my God. Wait, what? I thought you said $3,500.
No, in 1990...
It clicked to me that you said $35,000.
That's why I said it came out in 1988, but nobody would buy it. So in 1990, they released a commercial CD burner. So think of this. It says, I'm reading this off Wikipedia, but I double check some of this stuff on here. So I don't always trust Wikipedia blindly, but I know this is true. So they were the size of a washing machine, and they cost $35,000 in 1990.
Does it wash your clothes too?
It does not.
Haha, I made a joke. Just kidding. Not very funny.
Okay. So by 1992, the cost of a CD burner was down to $10,000 to $12,000. And so by 95, and I remember getting one in the late 97, 8-ish, my dad got a CD burner. In 95, HP, so Hewlett-Packard, released one that was manufactured by Philips, and it was $900. It was the first recorder to cost less than $1,000. So
the first CD burner that I had came with my computer.
Yeah, before that, you could go out and buy one.
I remember.
We went out and bought one, and actually, my dad installed it in the computer, because you didn't come stocking computers then. And I think even then, I think he probably spent, I don't know for sure, but I know it was several $100s.
Wow.
But, so you're talking, you know, you went from 1990, is this kind of like, you know, talking about how technology is exponential, and how it keeps getting better, and it keeps getting cheaper, and it keeps getting smaller. 1990, $35,000. 92, $10,000. Down to 95, talking about under $1,000. And by the mid to, what we're talking about, like 96, 97, 98. By the end of the 90s, it was affordable for somebody to buy a CD burner. But that was all started in the 1990s. Was technology that was created in the 1990s. And it was something that I remember, I started burning CDs like 98-ish.
You're older than me, CDs. So that I started burning CDs like in 2000.
So
2001.
So because we're doing a special episode this weekend, it's not all just tech stuff. I'm curious, like so when you were burning your mix CDs, you know, what was that like? How did you?
Oh my gosh, I had so many. I don't even know. Like, I would put, like, stupid stuff on it, too. Like, I remember I had clips from, like, Austin Powers on it. And what else did I have? You listened to it with me. I had, like, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Weird...
Yeah, okay, so we're listening to her mixtape the other day. Like, our mix CD, rather. And I'm surprised it even played, because one of the things I do want to mention, one of the tech things, is that these CDs, by the way, excuse me, these CDs, they don't last forever.
Yeah, mine are all chipped.
A CD, not even that, a CD burnt in 2000, by 2010, you know, and I see pictures online all the time. Basically, the way a CD burner works is that there's a dye, when it's burned, the CD is actually making the dye lighter or darker, which is what, that's how the data gets burned onto the CD, is there's a dye there. And I could go into a lot more detail than that, but I want to keep it simple, because I don't want to spend an hour on it. But so this dye, over time, it fades. And as it fades, as it starts to degrade,
Well, it's the help data that I've kept mine, like, in a case that entire time.
Probably, yes.
They've never been out of cases.
Well, like, I've seen pictures of some from, like, 2000 that were just, you know, left out.
Yeah.
And they've degraded to the point where they're not readable.
Hmm.
So, but yeah, so I'm surprised that your CD even played, but let's go back to the story for a minute. So we're riding in the van listening to the CD, and all of a sudden the theme song to Mr. Rogers, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like some stupid rap song that Amy had that happened to have like the beat from Mr. Rogers in it. But no, it was the full, you know, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, like the whole Mr. Rogers
theme song. It was because it was right after he passed away, and me and my friends were sad, and we're like, let's download his song, and we did, and... Yeah.
That is bizarre.
I know. We were a weird bunch. We're special. Stop looking at me like that.
Yeah, so yeah, MP3s and CDRs. I'm trying to think, what else music-wise in the 1990s? Oh, the Sony Discman, which we tried to find a commercial
for that.
But the commercials all sucked.
And yeah, they're all just sound.
It was
music.
A creepy Japanese one we couldn't play because it would have scared people.
Aren't they all?
They're all pretty scary, yeah.
Like, sorry if anybody from Japan is listening.
I love Japan. I'd love to visit someday, but your commercials are damn creepy. The one that had, like, the
McDonald's one.
Or the one with the... You've seen the one with the women? The woman, I think it was, like, for PlayStation 2, and, like, her eyeballs were, like, in her hands, like, in the palm of her hands. Like,
but if you think about it, though, it's really creative advertising because it gets your attention.
It is, yeah. I gotta give them credit, yeah. And I love sushi, so... And I love Sega. I really do like a lot of things that are Japanese.
I like Nintendo.
You do love Nintendo.
But, what was I going to say? I was going to say something.
Sony Discman. That was another innovation.
Oh, one thing that I wanted to talk about, but I, like, went to research it, and I was so sad because it came out in the 2000s, like, right in 2000, and it was, if anybody remembers, the Hit Clips, and I totally forgot about them until Josh's brother gave me one that he had left over from, like, 14 years ago. And it's, like, the little teeny little MP3 players that have, like, the singles on it by, like, you know, Britney Spears and NSYNC.
Yeah, wasn't it, like, they're only, like, a minute and a half or like,
yeah.
60 seconds?
They're like,
short.
Song samples.
And I love how in the commercial, we won't put it in the episode because we can't, because that'd be really cheating because it's a 2000 thing.
Yeah.
But I love on the commercial, how, and go on YouTube and Google, go on YouTube and search Hit Clips if you want to see the commercial, but they're, like, great quality sound. I remember those things sound like crap. It sounded like you're playing a music through, like, a can of SpaghettiOs or something.
Yeah.
Like, it did not sound good at all. It was like that game Telephone with the string of the two tin cans. Yeah, that's what it sounded like. It was cool, though, because I remember, like, people would have, like, on a kid, they'd have the keychain one. They'd have, like, on their bag, and they'd, like, play it during school, and that would make the teachers all mad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Sony Discman, that came out in the 90s, or really kind of blew up in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, I think prior to that, everybody had... I mean, I had a Walkman at first.
I had a Discman.
Oh, see, now I just aged myself.
You did.
You're only
2 years older than I am.
I had a Walkman, and then after, I don't know, 3-4 years of that, then I got a Discman, but it wasn't even a real Sony Discman. Those were like $300. It was like the cheapo Walmart, whatever, CD player.
I had a really nice, probably like 2000, maybe like 2000 or 2001, I had a really nice one. It was a Sony, and it was gold.
Hmm.
It was really nice.
Do you ever have any of the, speaking of MP3s, do you ever have any of the CD players that actually played MP3 discs?
No.
Because, see, if you... Another little tech tip for people at home. And you probably know this if you guys burn CDs. If you burn a disc, you can either burn it as an audio CD, which is a certain number of minutes, and it'll say on the disc how many minutes you can fit. Or if you burn it as a data CD, it's a certain amount of data, like, you know, 700 megabytes.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, if you burn it as a data disc, you can fit more songs. Well, they had MP3 player CD players where you instead of burning it as an audio disc, you would just burn a disc with a whole bunch of MP3s on it, and it would still play them all. It knew, like, to read the disc, and you had to read an MP3 file, and it would play them.
Hmm.
So you could fit, like, 80 songs or 60 songs or whatever on one CD.
Oh, yeah, no, a lot of friends I used to go to school with would have, like, 80 songs on a CD.
Yeah, that's because they were using MP3 discs.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's what I always wondered how they did that.
So that's our big spotlight on 90s music stuff. So the last thing I want to talk about is we'll play a couple commercials. I want to do video gaming in the 90s really quick because I didn't want to spend too much time on it because I am going to be starting a separate podcast all about classic consoles. And the theme of this show generally usually is computers and technology and things like that. But
video gaming is technology.
It is. It's electronics. So say we're doing a special episode this week. I thought, what the heck? And so at the end, we'll talk about two systems. Amy's going to talk about the Super Nintendo, and I'm going to talk about the Sony PlayStation. So right after this, right after our two commercials, we'll be right back with that discussion.
Words can't describe the endless challenge of Super Mario World, so we let the players do the talking. Super Mario World is here. It's one of the new generation of Nintendo games. It comes only with Super Nintendo, and it's like nothing you've ever faced. Now you're playing with power. Superpower.
Hello, citizens of Europe. As spokesperson for SAPS, the Society Against PlayStation, I'd like to talk to you about a menace threatening humanity. It's happening right here, in our very homes, and corrupting the lives of our loved ones. Yes, friends, I'm talking about this. It may look like a harmless bagel toaster, but inside is a deadly donut. How do you know PlayStation is not a normal game system? It carries these telltale signs. Scientists say its effects are mind-boggling. Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Here we have a normal, healthy young man. And here we have a fellow who's been experimenting with PlayStation for only a few minutes. Proof that we SAPs must be on our guard. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
All right, so there's our last two commercials of this week's episode. Are you sad it's coming to an end soon?
I am. I love talking about 90s stuff, especially Super Nintendo.
We'll have to do one in the future. You know, I want to do maybe one of these every couple of months. Maybe in August? So end of, September. Maybe we can do another one and do, something about, the 80s.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Or, we do one about the early 2000s. Because a lot of technology happened in the 2000s.
Oh, a lot, yeah. And that's the era that I know the best, because...
Yeah, so we'll do some more of these. If people enjoy it, let us know. MrTechieVT@gmail.com. Or go on the website, comment and stuff. Let us know if you enjoy this. We plan on doing more. But it's not going to be a thing we're going to do regularly. It'll be, every couple of months. But so we just had two commercials. The first one was a Super Nintendo commercial, and the second one was a PlayStation, weird PlayStation commercial. But, like I said earlier, this will all be in the show notes, MrTechie.net/episode7 with the number 7. So Amy, you want to talk about the Super Nintendo?
I'd love to.
This is Amy's favorite system.
It is my favorite.
You like this or the NES better?
The Super Nintendo is my absolute favorite.
My favorite system is the Dreamcast, which we didn't even get into, which technically is a 90s. It's 1999. Yeah. But I want to talk about something that I felt was revolutionary. And if I think about the two top-selling consoles in the 90s, it's probably... Well, there's probably three, but the big ones are Super Nintendo and PlayStation. The Genesis, I think, has got to be in that conversation somewhere, too. But the two we're going to talk about, I think, are the biggest two in terms of sales and whatnot. So go ahead, Amy. Super Nintendo time.
Okay, so this Nintendo system... is near and dear to my heart. I love it. I am, I'm so obsessed with Super Mario. I love all the Mario games, and I remember being, 5 years old, probably six, five or six, and I would beat the games. I was so good at them. And I used to play with my friends and, my dad and everything, but...
So which Mario was Super Nintendo? Was that Super Mario, was that World?
Yeah, there was Super Mario World, there was Super Mario 3,
I thought Super Mario 3 was on the NES.
It was, but it was better graphics.
Graphics. No, Super Mario All-Stars is the one you're thinking about.
Super Mario All-Stars for Super Nintendo, and it had all the different games on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but they were, way better graphics, and you could save your game, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't with the NES.
Right.
But Super Mario World was the new one for SNES, which was one of my favorite games, and I still play it now. But the SNES came out in 1991. Hold on. I'm reading right now as we speak.
Don't hit any of the knobs in our fancy new mixer.
Oh, I think I just did. Sorry.
Well, things seem to still be working.
But no, it was released in 1991, and it was the best-selling game console of that era. So what were all those game systems that came out at the same time? You said it was the Genesis.
So Genesis, I mean, there's a bunch, like...
16-bit era.
16-bit, you're talking about the two big, I mean, there was the Atari Jaguar, which, Atari Jaguar.
Jaguar.
Apparently I can't talk. Atari Jaguar, which was, well, people say Jaguar, don't they?
No.
People are talking like the car of a Jaguar.
No.
Like the fancy car? No. Okay. Well, so the Atari Jaguar, which was a big one, and then you had the SNES and you had the Genesis. So those were the big three.
But, no, it was the top system for that entire era. And even when game consoles started becoming more advanced, when, let's see, what was it, the 32-bit era? Right. It was when
I think mine was still one of the top-selling systems. I think mine is 32-bit. I think the PlayStation is 32-bit.
Oh, maybe. But even when all of those more advanced systems came out, the SNES was still surpassing all of the sales for these new ones.
Well,
for a short period of time, obviously. And then, you know.
It took a page out of the...
Why are you pushing me away?
Because you're, like, too close to the mic.
Oh, sorry.
See how it's turning red? Did you do that? You're going to blow everybody's eardrums
out. I'm overloading the microphone. Yes. It's yelling at me.
That's not possible. You're not Italian or anything, right?
Stop it. I am Italian.
Yeah, I know. Which means you're loud, because Italians are loud.
I am loud. I apologize.
It's all right. We all love you.
Everyone loves an Italian girl.
Yeah, something like that. So, no, I mean, they took a page kind of out of Atari's playbook. Back in the early 90s, when the NES was, you know, really doing well. In the early 90s, the Atari, the 2600, talking about a system that came out in 1978. They were selling it at a discounted prices with games marked down, because they had a whole bunch of back inventory they were trying to sell, so... I think Nintendo realized that, hey, we can do the same thing. People will buy the Super Nintendo because it's cheaper, and people can't afford this new PlayStation. So they, you know, it's sold for years and years and years and years, which also speaks to how amazing of a machine it is. I mean, it really is one of the best systems of all time, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite.
So what do you think about the controller? Do you like the controller?
I loved the controller.
People either like, it's like either you love the Genesis controller, so people don't know what I'm talking about.
I like the Super Nintendo controller way better than the NES controller.
Well, NES controller is square.
Yeah, and it hurt your hands after a while. Yeah. But I had no issues with the Super Nintendo controller.
Okay, people know what we're talking about. You can go ahead and Google SNES controller and Google Genesis controller and Google NES controller.
Aren't they kind of similar? Look at the Genesis three.
No, Genesis has got that weird, it's like curvy, because it's kind of like a boomerang. It's got that weird curve to it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and personally, I actually, even though I love the Genesis, I like the Super Nintendo controller better. The Genesis one was kind of weird to me, the way it fits in your
hands. Awkward to hold.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Nintendo wins the awkward award for the Nintendo 64, because that controller is freaking weird.
I loved that controller.
I still don't like it.
Oh, I loved it. That was one of my favorite controllers. It was so easy
to hold. Different
conversation.
So, anything else to add about Super Nintendo?
No.
Other than that, you love it?
I love it.
There's tons of great games for it. I mean, I think that was really the advent of all the, you know, I mean, there were sports games on the Atari and the NES, but if you like sports games, they kind of sucked. They really didn't have the graphics or anything yet to really make it good. And I remember I spent many a night on the SNES playing.
Yeah, I did a lot of, like, the NHL games.
Yeah, NHL and the baseball games. Yeah, but compared to the NES, they're way better.
And I also played this Zelda game. I don't remember what it was called. I did. And it was fun. I don't even remember which one it was. I don't even know, but.
This was a time, too, where you started to notice, like, in the 90s, they started integrating, like, companies would advertise, like, in video games, which happens all the time now, but, like, you'd have things like, I know there's a game for SNES and Genesis that's, I don't know if you remember, but Domino's used to have a mascot, like Domino's Pizza.
No.
That was a Spot. I think his name was Spot. And it was, like, this game, I have it for Genesis, called, like, Spot's Journey or something like that.
No.
I'll have to look it up and show you.
I don't remember that at all.
But they started coming up with
games.
I remember
the Taco Bell Chihuahua.
What? It has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Well, I'm just saying. That's the only one I remember.
I forgot all about Taco Bell Chihuahua, actually, though. But there was, like, games like there was a McDonald's game for the SNES. There was this game with a Domino's character. There was a game with, like, you know, the Disney characters. This was really the time where you started to have a lot of... I mean, there were some licensed things on the NES, but it really started to blow up with the SNES. But, yeah, so that's a Super Nintendo, so... PlayStation 1, just real quick, because we're almost to an hour here. I remember very fondly, most of the 90s, I can't say most because it came out in 95, but the tail end of the 90s, most of that period of my life, though those 5 years, I mean, I got one right pretty close when it first came out for Christmas. I think it might have been like the next year, so it must have been like 96. But I spent hours upon hours upon hours in front of a TV playing PlayStation.
most guys that age do, I think.
I should be quiet.
It's true. Every guy that I know, well, like when they hit, until they hit like age like 22, are always
playing. I still love video games, but it doesn't mean I play them constantly. But I remember the thing for me, the thing that was really sold it for me, that I remember going to like parties, like I think of like a birthday party at a friend's house, and the fact that you could play your audio CDs.
Yeah.
Because the thing with the PS1, it's not the first system to use CDs. People actually think it is. It's not. I think the 3DO actually came out before that.
Was it the PS2 where you could play movies?
DVDs, yeah.
DVDs, yeah.
Yep, which is also huge. But so the 3DO came out first, I believe. Of course, I'm going to get that wrong. Someone's going to email me and yell at me, but I'm pretty sure 3DO came out first. I have one of those, too, in my collection. But those things were like $800, $900 new, mm-hmm. So nobody could afford it. So PlayStation was an affordable CD unit that you could play your music on it. You know, like, also Sega CD came out around that time. I don't know if they were before the PlayStation or not. There was, like, an add-on for the Genesis called Sega CD, which was expensive, and nobody really wanted it. And then you had the Sega Saturn, but I don't know where those all kind of came in timeline-wise. I mean, we could look it up. Hold on. Let me look it up real quick while I'm talking here. But the PS1 was the number one seller, by far. Far and away the number one seller. And the PS1...
I was never really into PlayStation when I was younger.
Really?
It was always Sega or Nintendo.
I feel like that...
None of my friends had PlayStation.
I feel like that controller, though, the PlayStation controller is, like, iconic. Like,
yeah.
With the dual thumbsticks. Well, the first one actually didn't have thumbsticks. The first one had just the directional pad.
But I feel like they... When did Super Nintendo...
try it again. When
did...
Should we leave that in or should we cut that out?
Oh, leave it
You're
in.
You're going, blah.
Leave it in. When did Super Nintendo come out? Was that in, like...
Super Nintendo?
Yeah. Did they copy the PlayStation controllers with the little thumb?
No. Super Nintendo came out before PlayStation.
Or not Super Nintendo. Nintendo 64.
Oh, N64?
Yeah.
Probably around the same time. Because I know that one of the big complaints... So, here's a little bit of history for people that are curious about this sort of thing. So, Super Nintendo had been out for a while. They saw Sega came out with the Sega CD, which I'm looking at up the date of that right now, which was like going to be, you know, one of the first CD-based video game consoles. And so Nintendo went, hey, we got to get in on that action. And so they actually worked with Sony for a long time, for almost a year, on developing a CD-based video game platform. And
was
so
that the GameCube?
No. It was going to be what ended up becoming the N64.
Oh.
And at some point along the way, I don't know who pissed off who, but they decided, nope, we're parting ways. We're not going to do this together. And so they stopped development. And so Sony took all the work they had done to that point and said, you know what? Screw you, Nintendo. We're going to create our own system. And they created the PlayStation. And, you know, if you know anything about... Even though I did like the N64, the sales were not like what they expected. The N64, I remember when it first came out, people were complaining a lot about, like, the controller.
People
and
were complaining about getting dizzy from the 3D games.
Yeah, just 3D games, too. I guess it was different, though. The images were different. It was a different kind of 3D. So
I remember that the Super Nintendo... Or, keep wanting to say Super Nintendo. The Nintendo 64. Wasn't that the first, like, 3D game system? I remember when it...
N64?
Yeah. It was,
there
like
was 3D games on the PlayStation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I remember it being, like, this huge deal because all the games were in 3D, like the Mario and...
I think they really pushed
Donkey
that.
Kong,
they pushed
yeah.
that because it was the first time that you... I think it wasn't that it was the first 3D system. It was the first time that you were able to play Mario in 3D.
Yeah.
So it was big news for everybody who was, you know, old-school game fans that you're playing Mario in 3D, you're playing Zelda in 3D, you know, you're playing Star Fox in 3D. Like, I'm thinking of all, like, the major titles. They're all in 3D. That was a big deal for Nintendo.
Hmm.
But so Sega CD actually was way before, 92. But it was $299. And here's the thing, is that Sega CD, you had to have a Genesis, then you had to buy the Sega CD. So for parents that had just bought a Genesis for their kids, they didn't have to turn around and shell out $300 to buy a Sega CD.
Yeah, who wants to do that?
Wasn't happening. So it was actually way before. So Sega CD was first. 3DO was around that time, too. PlayStation was, you know, we're talking a little bit later. You're talking PS1 came out in 94. But PS1 revolutionized it. It was cheaper. It was better. Sega CD, even though I'm a Sega fanboy and it pains me to say this, is not a very good system. It's just not. I've never owned one. I've played on a couple of them, and it's kind of crappy. So, yeah, so PlayStation was amazing, and I, you know, think of a lot of nights playing PS1. My only complaint back then, which, of course, there was limitations of hardware, was that I would always run out of space on the memory card, and I only had one, because back then they were expensive. So I had to figure out, okay, what game save do I want to delete? Like, what game am I not going to play right now? And then I'd delete it, and then a week later I'd regret it because I didn't want to go back and play it, and I'd delete it. And so that was my only problem. Yeah, so.
I like the SNES better.
I know you do.
It's my favorite. Yeah. And so does North America, because it sold more. Actually, I don't know if it sold more.
You don't
than
know
the
that. You're
it sold more than the Sega Genesis.
You're making claims here that you don't know whether they're true or not.
I bet it did.
I don't know.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So, do you have anything else you want to add about '90s technology? We covered a lot. We covered AOL.
We didn't talk about the Game
covered
Boy.
iMac.
Yeah. Was that was what year was that?
Look it up real quick. I think that was early '90s. If not, it was late '80s. But handheld gaming isn't anything revolutionary. I mean, I feel like, you know, I remember
feel like it is.
All the Tiger, you remember all the Tiger electronic handheld games? I mean, that goes back a long time, back into the 80s.
Oh.
Of course, the graphics of those were really crappy. It was all like that, the weird, looked kind of like a calculator when you were playing it. But
yeah.
So what's the Game Boy? What's the year of the Game Boy? If you scroll down, it should say introduced.
I'm looking.
This is really engaging podcast. Engaging radio.
89.
No. But you know what? You can talk about that for a minute because... Yeah, people generally didn't buy things like that back then. They're so expensive when it first came out.
Well, what I thought was funny...
I had a Game Boy in the early 90s.
You mentioned that there was this, like, attachment that they used to have. What was, like, a magnifying glass?
Yeah, it was this huge-ass magnifying glass with, like, a light on it. Because you couldn't... A, you couldn't see because it was so hard to see it. And B, there was no backlight back
then. So weird.
The thing was, though, the battery life was crazy. There was no backlight, so...
Yeah.
But you had to either play outside in the sunlight, have a lamp over your head, or use this magnifier. It was ridiculous. But... Yeah, Game Boy was cool. But
I
yeah,
didn't have
so,
Game
so we
Boy.
Talked about video games in the 90s. We talked about music in the 90s. We talked about, what else? The iMac. We talked about AOL and the advent of modern internet age.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to add, Miss Amy?
No, I don't think so.
All right, so this is way different than we normally do. You know, we kind of got off topic a whole bunch, but it was fun to kind of reminisce and sit here and talk about things from, like, our childhoods. If you were a kid of the 90s, or even if you were an adult in the 90s, but you remember some of this stuff fondly, like I said, please take part in the discussion. Let us know what you think. And, yeah, I can't think of anything else right now, so thank you for listening, and have
Thanks,
a good night,
guys.
You guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been another information-packed episode of Mr. Techie's Computer Academy. Visit the website at MrTechie.net. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.